Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.
This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 121 for September 28, 2011, leaving Livonia. So, Peter, here John, we are again. This is a historic show.
It is. We're doing it from a basement. An undisclosed bunker.
Yeah, an undisclosed bunker. Actually, it's the conference room of our suite of offices. This is the last show we're doing in this facility in Livonia, Michigan. So that's why we're leaving Livonia. We're going about 8 miles north of here into a new building that we bought, which is some pretty cool digs. So that's going to be fun.
It will be fun.
But we will not have a show next week because we're still in the process of moving, and that'll give us some time to do just that. But it's kind of cool that we've done 121 shows here.
Yeah,
I'm sort of blown away by that.
Hard to believe.
And
what's that, 2.5 years worth?
Is that right?
Kind of. 2.5 years?
I think that's probably right. I see Ben nodding over there.
We've taken a few weeks off and here and there.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. So, and we've got Joe Sesney with us tonight. Joe, great having you here with us.
Thanks, John.
From the Oakland Press.
Exactly.
And for those of you out there who don't know what the Oakland Press is, we have Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News, but we also have the Oakland Press for Oakland County and environs.
And we got Joe here tonight because we'll be talking about some of the UAW stuff, which he follows assiduously. But, yeah, what you were going to say?
No, I mean, the contracts are coming together. I think the GM contract was ratified this week. And GM actually got a good bump from it. It got Standard & Poor's actually raised their credit rating a little bit today. So that was actually a good fallout for them.
Do you think, Joe, it's overhyped? Some people are saying, oh, this is the new bright new future. Or is it just came to a deal that they were going to inevitably have to come to?
Oh, I think, yeah. I think the union went into the talks without many expectations. But in terms of the cost base for the company, it is kind of an inflection point because the wages are held down for a long period of time. And they also have sort of put a big cap on pension expenses, too, which has also been
But explain this to me. Why are they still negotiating? I mean, what was the official expiration of the contract? That was 3 weeks ago.
Right, well,
and they've been negotiating all summer long, and they still don't have this thing done.
Right, they have it is kind of a cumbersome and process of probably, I'm sure is a mystery to outsiders, but there's sort of a stop-start in here. When you get the first contract done, you have to sort of stop and wait to see what happens with the vote on the ratification. But they're pretty close to an agreement with Ford. I think you'll probably see that fall into place here in the next 3 or 4 days.
But don't you think this has got to do with politics for the union?
Oh,
because
but
if they had settled before the expiration of the contract, which I thought that was going to happen based on the kind of happy talk that Bob King was running around saying all year, but if they don't go past the deadline, if they don't have these exhaustive bargaining sessions, some of the rank and file will go, hey, you guys didn't fight hard enough.
Right. Well, there's always this. One of the things that the union, and it came pretty clear this year, that they didn't want to do what they call settling short, which means you don't get everything that you can by dramatizing the thing, basically. A lot of the drama has gone out of it over the last 20 years. But there's still a little bit of showmanship and theater that goes along.
Well, there still is the same old rhetoric, you know, at the beginning, the saber rattling. And, you know, at this point, I just found that so tedious.
Well, it is. And I think, to Bob King's credit and to the credit of the companies, too, they've kind of tried to minimize that this year. But there's still always talk of strikes.
Here's what I don't get is I don't know in any other form of business, any other part, whether it's suppliers negotiating with the car companies, for example, or the car companies negotiating with governments, even, that you go through this, I mean, nonstop. If they don't go to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and drop over from exhaustion, they feel like they haven't done their day's work.
There's probably two other industries where this still goes on. One is in the aircraft industry, in Boeing. They have still have the same kind of sort of setup. And then in the telephone industry, I mean, the old landline. But other than that, you're right, it's kind of gone away over the last 25 years.
I don't get it. I don't understand why you have to go to 2 o'clock in the morning, night after night after night after night, for weeks and weeks, and it's like...
They actually don't anymore. Actually, that's one of the little secrets is that they really don't go... They might go to 7 or 7.30 in the evening, but most of them, I think, are home and off, have knocked back after about 9 o'clock. The midnight session, there was probably a couple of midnight sessions at GM, and I think there'll probably be a couple of more at Ford maybe this weekend. But I think in large, some of that has gone away. And I think the last couple, King and his predecessor, Ron Gettelfinger, were just not interested in that. But you're right, the rhetoric's still there, and it's kind of old Detroit kind of thing, you know, it's sort of a Detroit thing that you have to kind of talk this way and talk tough, and I think it's kind of part of the culture here, and it should change, and it is changing, but it's changed much slower than I think a lot of people would like.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how Sergio Marchionne is going to really, if he digs his heels in, it's going to be very interesting.
Well, that's probably the one wild card in these talks, which is why I think the union kind of circumvented Chrysler and went to Ford here this week. And then we'll see how it goes.
Well, talk about that, because Sergio wrote a pretty nasty letter to Bob King saying, hey, dude, I flew all the way from Europe. And
Frankfurt.
And I saw him earlier that day in Frankfurt. I was dumbfounded when I heard he was in Detroit that night.
Right. This was an old-fashioned kind of theater kind of standoff. And I think, can understand how it happened. You know, Bob King was, they had finally reached the critical part of the juncture of the talks with GM, and he didn't really want to break away, and then all of a sudden, but he has his commitment to go see Sergio, and so he stands up Sergio, and there's a little dramatics there.
So Sergio wrote this letter to him. What'd you make of it?
I thought it was a little bit of showmanship on Mr. Marchionne's part, but the showmanship had a point.
It
was calculated, and
it was calculated. But you know, it starts out saying it's now 10 p.m.
Right.
And here's a guy who just flew, you know, the 8 hours from Europe after putting in a full day at the Frankfurt Auto Show. I think, you know, he's tired, he's jet lagged, he's pissed off that this guy has stood him up. And it was an interesting letter because, to me at least, I got to believe Sergio wrote it, not the PR staff. I could hear him. I could almost hear his voice coming
through
in the letter.
I'm sure he wrote it.
Yeah, I know with no intermediary. I don't even think.
Yeah, what's somebody going to say? Oh, well, you really can't send that. Really? I'm going to send it.
Right, and maybe somebody proofread it, you know, but that's about it. But it was all pure Sergio.
But he was ticked off.
He had a right to be. Yeah. He absolutely had a right to be.
But that gets to you saying, what if he digs in his heels? Because, like I said, I think it was calculated to. But I think it was from the heart. I think he really.
Well, he's already said that the GM and whatever Ford agrees is not going to cut it for them.
Right, and I think part of the reason that the union went to Ford second rather than the Chrysler is because they want to have at least two agreements in case they have to force it to arbitration.
Well, momentum. They'll get an agreement with Ford. You know, Ford's got a special relationship with the union, doesn't it?
Yeah, they haven't had a strike since Gerald Ford was president, as I said in one article. And so, nobody's going to... I can't see that breaking down in any way this time. And especially when you look at, if you compare Ford's overall finances with what they... It's not that hard for them to chin the bar on the GM.
But don't you think the family made a decision sometime back in the 80s that, hey, look, this union's going to be around forever. Why go to war with them? Let's just figure out how to make this thing work.
I think that was... They made that decision in the early 80s.
Well, yeah, but so did the rest of the industry, and they agreed to all these contracts that eventually strangled
them. Sunk them, yeah, exactly. And And Ford has also been the first one to try and quietly unwind it, too. I mean, behind the scenes. But they've never made a big issue out of it. Yeah. But they got a lot of changes put through in 2005, 2006 that GM and Chrysler didn't get because of their special relationship. And they started unwinding things like the number of job classifications started dropping. People started falling out of the jobs bank, got retired instead of put on a... into the jobs bank, and I think these are all part of the. Which are good. This is symbolic of how the relationships evolved over the years. But Ford still has a real problem. Their pension fund is underfunded, just like GM's. They need a good contract to bump their credit rating to investment grade. And there's a couple of things that are really.
And they still have the highest labor costs of anybody.
Not as
bad as it was, but you know. Right. You don't get real competitive when you have the highest cost.
But the key is that the entry-level wage, the second-tier wage, it'll change, but it'll change very modestly over the next 4 years, about a dollar an hour over 4 years, each year over the next 4 years. And I think Ford looking at it and saying, well, that's doable. That's good for us. And again, there's a pay freeze on older workers, which is also something that Ford would like. So there are some good things in the contract that they probably will benefit from.
Well, that all is dependent on what the transplants do, though, right? Because
right.
if they
well,
just hold the line on wages, not this dollar an hour over 4 years or so, they're going to have a bigger advantage 4 years from now than they do today.
Right. And I think for companies like Toyota and Honda, this contract actually is something of a challenge because of the dollar-yen relationship. They still depend on a lot of components coming from Japan. And I think I was talking to David Cole from the Center of Automotive Research. Today.
Formerly,
right.
Now he's chairman emeritus.
He was saying he thought that the domestics were beginning to open up a serious cost advantage over the Japanese. So this put some pressure on them, I think, on Honda and Toyota to look at other ways to lower their labor costs, which I think they're going to do by they'll probably go to an even lower beginning wage, which is sort of a reversal of like 70 years of history in the auto industry, because when they came, they basically paid the UAW wage. But now that wage is beginning to drop probably more towards the mean of the manufacturing wage in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it used to be more than double the mean wage in the U.S.
Right. We should probably take our first break here to thank our sponsors. But I want to come back and talk about the transplants in the UAW in a second. But, Ben, we got to thank our friends at Bridgestone. Why don't we bring that up?
Look at this. Bridgestone's using natural rubber, researching ways to enhance its quality and performance, and making their factories more environmentally friendly, producing products that save on fuel and emissions. And some that can be reused again. And promoting eco-friendly and safety driving campaigns. One team, one planet. Bridgestone.
So yeah, let's go back to that topic of the transplants in the UAW, because earlier this year, I think it was in February, Bob King said, we're going to organize one of these transplants before the year is out. And I thought all along, well, then he's got to really have this super great process of getting a new contract with the big three. And that's why I thought this thing would be wrapped up before the deadline. Mm-hmm. Here we are 3 weeks after the deadline. It's not wrapped up. It's going to go on for
right.
a few more weeks.
Yeah,
I can't believe any of the transplants are going, you know, sign us up for this. This sounds like a lot of excruciating fun.
They're
not. They weren't going to sign up for it anyway in any case. So, I think Mr. King has to find a different strategy here, but Toyota got caught this year where they had to set up their own jobs bank, you know, for people when they closed the plants in Texas, and because their vehicles weren't selling. So I mean, they have their own issues that they have to deal with, and training is a big issue for them. I mean, they don't actually. In places like in some of those plants in Georgia and Alabama, they don't have enough skilled people to.
That is a big issue. No, you're absolutely right.
So And in order to attract people, they have to more or less pay a UAW wage. So there's a little bit of push-pull on both sides here. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. And I think ultimately, and I think this is the way that I think one of the things that King is going to go next is building stronger alliances with unions in Europe and in Mexico. And I think that's ultimately, I think that's probably the union's next strategic target. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But I agree, it's a very imperfect process.
Did he get too excited earlier this year? Should he have not said, "I'm going to go get one of those transplants"?
I think he should have. Yeah, I think. But he was sort of there was some internal dynamic that he had to deal with. And
he was clearly speaking to his constituency.
Right.
Now I don't know who Sergio was speaking to when he made all his pronouncements about selling 75,000 Alfa Romeos here by 2014, and I got a whole pile of hate mail from my last two columns about Fiat, and there were two columns. The first one was about how pissed the dealers are.
Right.
Because I don't blame them. Yeah. I mean, they
got one car. They didn't sign up for one
Sergio
car.
Sergio came down from the mountaintop with the tablets saying, Alpha, Fiat, you are all going to get rich, but you have to sign up now, and we want a separate showroom, and you're going to spend at least $1 million, if not two, but it'll all come good at the end. Well, you know, you see these guys have spent their money, and then all of a sudden, well, we might have an Alpha at the end of 2013, maybe, most likely 2014. And these guys are looking at these 500s, and they're, you know, hey, 500's a cute car. Mm-hmm. It's the flavor of the moment, quickly dying off because this was the summer of the 500. And now it's going to, you know, it's just like anything else in this the society we live in. I mean, it's hot, 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 and then it's just like, okay, next. Yeah. And these dealers are going to be sitting there looking at their watches and looking at their, you know, Easter egg colored showroom and saying, man, what am I going to do for 2 years here?
Well, I mean, and those are good points. And in fact, the day he sent the letter, there was also a downgrade on Fiat Chrysler's credit rating. Mm-hmm. And I think that probably agitated him even more than Bob King not showing up for coffee earlier in the evening. And And you know, if you look at Fiat stock price in Italy, in Europe, it's pretty dismal.
You know, hey,
and some of that's the global phenomenon. But I mean,
Sergio is a very bright guy. I've never said he wasn't a bright guy. The thing that grated me early on was the grandiose pronouncements that I knew was just going to bite him in the ass later. And here we are, and you know, Sergio's Uber micromanagement style is starting to wear thin. And, you know, and we've talked about this, you know, this organization is set up to survive and thrive with one guy running it, Sergio.
Right. That is an issue.
There is no succession.
That's their Achilles heel.
Yeah, there is no succession plan, because when you have 400 direct reports or whatever it is, 32, whatever it is, direct reports, that organization cannot function. If Sergio steps aside, which he will, mm-hmm. it's going to be chaos. The other thing is, on his travels and adventures of micromanaging, he let the Fiat 500 launch. He left it to some less experienced people, less experienced creative people, ad agency people, and no money. And, you know, besides the fact that getting the showrooms up and running was late, you know, by the time they got the marketing out, it was late. And, again, going back to his original pronouncement, so we're going to sell 6,600 500s a month.
Right, and they're probably, if they're clocking in
3,000.
Yeah. They're doing about 3,000 a month.
About 3,000, right. Is that what
and,
it is?
And
which
then,
isn't that bad, really.
And then,
better than I thought they'd
Yeah, and then, you know, he's got his marketing guru, Olivier Francois, who's just insufferably just tedious as all get out. He's prone to the big grandiose pronouncements, the big creative strokes of genius. And, yeah, you know, they hit one with Eminem in the Super Bowl. Now, they've beaten that thing to death. Now they come up with J-Lo and the 500, which was just like, you have got to be kidding me. Then, not only that, they run it on Monday Night Football.
Oh, I was wondering. I thought that was a curious buy for that. I mean,
curious is a good word, Joe. It's a really good word for that.
I thought, well, you know, maybe they should put it on another show like Desperate Housewives or something.
And well, yeah.
You know, and so, and now, you know, okay, so they're... They brought in some Chrysler veterans to help with the marketing. Now Olivier, Sergio's told Olivier, you will focus on Fiat now. And so who knows where they're going. Again, if I'm a dealer, I'm going, oh, man.
But, you know, the interesting thing is I heard Sergio say to a small group of reporters that he didn't think the 500 or the Alpha products were ready for the American market. But then he kind of turned around and went and told the dealers a different story.
He told the dealers a whole different story. And, you know, he gave, like I said, he came down from the mountaintop, gave him the big rah-rah speech and had his, you know, had his minions run out to the audience with their clipboards, sign here. And they're all like, well, yeah, we'll run through the wall for you, Sergio. And now they're sitting there going, oh, man, I just spent $1.5 million on this. And I'm looking at my watch and The showroom's not as crowded as it was even 60 days ago. But what am I going to do for the next 2 years, you know?
But the first Alpha, he basically said it wasn't ready for the American market.
Well.
And so I guess, yeah, he sometimes gets ahead of himself, I think.
He gets a lot ahead of himself, except the problem is when his followers sign up and pay cash, then it gets to be a real problem.
The only thing I'll say is I'm impressed with the way that Chrysler's running these days. I think they're doing a great job. Now, maybe that Sergio doesn't get the credit for that, but at least he, you know, my favorite phrase, he let the dogs off the leashes. You know,
yeah, he's Chrysler, Chrysler itself, I mean, you know.
And I noted on my blog today, I noted that, you know, the Consumer Reports gave a really glowing review to the Chrysler 300.
Yeah, but
which is a fantastic sedan.
But
is
the 300
selling?
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
It's not, I mean, the 200, and it's a lot less expensive than the 300,
well, they're
is
just,
actually doing pretty good.
Well, they're blowing the 200 out. I mean, there's incentives, there's, you know.
Right, and I think they took a little bit too, you know, they took probably too much price on the 300. I think that was part of the problem.
Maybe that's it. But I've been puzzled as to why such a good car is selling better.
Terrific. I think Consumer Reports called it the best sedan that Chrysler's made in decades.
Well, that's, you know, sort of a backhanded compliment.
But, you know, the other thing about the Fiat thing, and, you know, people outside this business don't really get this, but it used to be the old adage was you've got 24 months to launch a car in this world that we live in. Or a brand, you've got 24 months. Well, that 24 months is now really, you talk to enough people, you get the real story, and it's 12 to 15 months. Hmm. If you don't have it together by the 15th month,
it's probably
not going to happen.
And they've used up 6 already.
Well, they basically used up 10 is the way I count it, because they've been hyping this for almost a year. It's, you know, so even if you give them 6 months, they're on the clock. Mm-hmm. And guess what? They don't have any new products beyond the 500 and the sport version.
Well, yeah, they have the sport version. The Abarth version is coming.
The Cabrio hasn't even been ever. I haven't seen.
Well, that was, yeah.
The only thing I'll say, though, is 3,000 a month is pretty good. They're outselling the Mini. In fact, they're almost outselling Mini and Countryman combined. Mini sales have really taken it on the chin. Now, I don't know enough. Does that mean they missed a boat shipment, or is it that the 500's really hurting the Mini?
I don't know, but, beware of the 3,000 a month, because what looks good now is not going to look good.
I agree, Peter. We need to see, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 months of 3,000 a month.
It's a fad. Remember when the smart car was a fad in 2008 or whenever it was. And people were like, wow, you know, and then it just fell off a cliff. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen to the 500. It's certainly more substantive than the Smart.
Right.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's the flavor of the month. And, boy, when you're the flavor of the month, that goes away quick.
Yeah, it does. Sure does.
Mini, I don't know what happened there. I can't. Overall sales have been fairly good.
I think their marketing
Quite
their marketing has taken a hit.
Look, it's only 2 months of bad sales at Mini. So I've learned, don't read too much into that. Right. Because like I said, you know, did a ship not come in? That, literally, that could cause it.
Did they get caught in that ad agency switch at BMW? Or were they had a separate agency, didn't they?
Well, no, they switched the marketing bosses, the players.
Okay.
And, you know, that's always dangerous. You know, it takes a while. You know, I was in the ad biz for a long time, and there are fleeting moments when you have good chemistry between a client and an ad agency, but it's the people, day-to-day working relationship, the people. And you bring in someone else, it can go away in a second. I remember when I was running Dodge's advertising, they brought in someone from the field and handed him advertising, you know, because that was the old way. You just rotate people through jobs and that it somehow comes good. And this guy sat in a meeting with all my agency people and said, well, I watch a lot of TV. I know what good advertising is. And I got back to the agency and I turned to my right-hand guy and said, oh, we are so toast.
Right about now.
I didn't say that word. I said we are.
Yeah.
No, but that's true. I mean,
with an F.
Yes.
Right.
Foast. We are so foast now. Yeah.
It's a much more complicated and more sensitive process than people,
on the outside. Yeah, really people don't realize. I mean, when agency changes, yeah, that changes the chemistry. But just changing the players, because when you're servicing a big account like that, you are with these you're with the clients all the time, you know, 3 or 4 meetings a day, all kinds of different things. And there's sort of a continuity, and you're on the same page, and there's a communication level. If that gets upset, boy, things can go south in a hurry.
And the other thing, in defense of Fiat in the 500, we sat through a presentation this week at the Society of Automotive Analysts, and one of the things that the analyst from Citibank pointed out was that younger buyers for whom this car is targeted are having a very hard time, are staying away from the market, basically, are out of the market, basically, because of the economic conditions. And I think to some extent that might be hampering them at this point, and it does play into sales of cars like the Mini and the 500, young people just don't know what to buy or what to do right now because of the poor economic condition.
And let's get into that more, but let's take another break here because we got another sponsor of ours that we've got to thank. And Ben, why don't we thank our friends at Chevrolet?
Not only does the Chevrolet Cruze offer a ton of features, it features some of the best safety and maintenance in the business. The Cruze comes with rear park assist, which beeps if you're about to back into something. It has rollover mitigation, which means the car senses if it might roll over, and applies the brakes to the outside front tire to bring the car back under control. And it has OnStar vehicle diagnostics, which sends you emails about the latest status of your car. And you can learn a lot more about it at Chevrolet.com/Cruze.
GM has done such a great job at Chevrolet with Cruze, product-wise, marketing-wise. Mm-hmm. But I still see some of the old GMs that when they focus on something, they can really do it. But when they still have a lot of other stuff to move. They've demonstrated they can build a small car, do it right, really offer the consumer something of value, market it right, and they got a hit on their hands. I hope it doesn't have to
do that up and down the line.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't go to their heads. But you know.
But that's the other thing. The last couple of months, the Cruze has been strong in what would be considered a very poor economy, and so which bodes well for GM in the
long. But think about this, and this is what I wanted to get into. We keep talking about the poor economy and you know all this unemployment. Car sales are going just fine. I mean, in the new normal, okay?
Right.
But there are a million people going into showrooms every month and saying, I want a new car.
Right.
So what's the deal? How can we possibly be on the verge of a double-dip recession with a million people buying a new car every month?
And if you look at the forecast for the early preliminary reports for September sales, it wasn't a lot of fleet, only about 20% fleet. So Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of consumers out there who have the wherewithal.
Full-size pickups are doing very well.
Right.
Full-size SUVs are doing very well. It's not just small cars. Small cars have been doing decently, too.
Right. I guess there's two ways to look at it. One, the economy isn't as weak as Wall Street makes it out to be. And secondly, that there are still a lot of people out there who cars, the average age of the fleet is getting much older.
It's old. It's 10 years. It's the oldest it's ever been.
And so there are a lot of people who have to come into the market every month to look for a new car because the old one just isn't getting the job done anymore.
You know, this is my favorite time of year around here because we pick up the classifieds. Mm-hmm. And they put all this money around this area. They've got standard pickups. I mean, standard pickups. And they put all this rebate money on them. And you can buy a brand new full-size pickup. Now, granted, it just has air, rear-wheel drive, and a few other things. For $16,000.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'm looking at the paper the other day, and I said, holy. And I'm looking at it, and I said,
holy toast.
Yes, holy toast. This is the
toast starting with an S in this case.
You know, it's the best deal. You know, what a country. You can buy a brand new full-size pickup if you need one, or maybe even if you don't. I mean, it's $16,000-$17,000. It's unbelievable.
Well, the other factor that's playing into this is that the supply of used cars is actually is beginning to shrink a lot.
Well, it has.
And so that's also probably pushing more buyers into the new car market than you would.
Because both ways, it works both ways. You know, if you have a trade-in, it's worth more now.
Right,
so
exactly.
It's easier to get into a new car. But here's the other thing that I find fascinating is heavy truck sales. I'm talking big semi-trucks, Class 7, Class 8, even Class 4 through 8. Sales are screaming right now.
Well,
they're doing fantastic. And I don't mean new normal fantastic. They're just going gangbusters.
But aren't these companies buying them to avoid the upcoming emission standards?
I don't think so, Peter. I think they avoided it 2 years ago when the EPA bumped up emission standards on trucks and the prices went way up. So they avoided it then. But here's the other thing. Truck sales are screaming along in Canada and Mexico and Latin America and, of course, Asia.
And the new heavy trucks are more efficient. Right. Maybe that has something to do
with it. But, you know, in my entire lifetime, and that would mean you guys, too.
It's true.
Heavy trucks are a leading indicator of where the economy is going.
Right. And so, again, that it's a sign that perhaps the economy isn't quite as weak as
And I don't mean to be flippant or glib about it, but when we talk about 9% unemployment, yes, it's terrible, and I feel their pain.
Right.
It also means 91% of the people have jobs.
Right.
And I think those that have got jobs, even though they're concerned and worried, they've got the money that if they need to go buy a new car, they can go out and buy it.
In the same way, if you're running a business and you need a new truck, you have the wherewithal. Business has a lot of cash if you read the financial page. So they have the wherewithal to go out and buy a fleet of trucks if they need it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the economy probably in Canada is a little bit stronger than it is in the United States, and that kind of helps buoy it up. And same way in places like Brazil and
all I'm saying is, yes, I think we're in very uncertain economic times. But when I look at the way car sales and heavy truck sales are going, there's some other things in the economy. I just don't believe there's going to be a double-dip recession.
And if you look at the production forecasts,
they're boosting them. Fourth quarter productions are up.
Ford's, they're talking about adding a considerable amount of employees.
And the inventories are not out of line. I think J.D. Power said, 49 days? Something.
Is that right?
Yeah.
49 days is below normal.
Right. Exactly. So it's like they're holding. I was kind of looking for, say, a report that said, well, they're up at 80, 85 days. Maybe in some segments they are.
But you might find a vehicle or two that's up there, right?
Right. But overall, the inventory levels aren't really out of line with what you'd expect. For steady sales.
Hey, what'd you make, going back to Ford a minute, that they might move the Fusion production to the U.S.?
Well, I think the Fusion's going to change that segment so dramatically. I think they're going to have...
Because of the styling.
The car, the package, mm-hmm. and the look, they are going to have a Grand Slam home run on their hands.
And right. And so that they have to change the plant anyway because the car comes next year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, and then when you change the plant and change everything over, it's kind of easy to move pieces around for whatever.
Sure.
And but politically, I think that Ford might have a problem with Mexico. But I think also think when they move all the pieces along, I think Hermosillo would get another product that would satisfy everybody. And
so, where are they going to put the Fusion in the U.S.?
That's a good question. I don't see Ford. I don't see a plant there Ford can move it.
Oh, I see two actually.
Okay,
yeah,
which two?
Well, number one, if I were Ford, I'd put it in Flat Rock.
Oh, okay.
And, you got the Mustang there, but they're taking the Mazda MX-6 out of the plant.
Right.
So,
Mustang, and that might be playing into it, too, that they do have the Flat Rock plant available.
That's right. And then remember, they closed down the old Focus plant and
across
moved
street,
production to the Michigan truck plant. So that old Focus plant is just sitting there, too.
I thought they had scrapped it, but perhaps not. I guess
I don't know.
Well, but you'd have to scrap it anyway in order to put a new vehicle in there.
But, well, you know, you just
I
put
mean,
in
scrap the insides so you can...
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that plant, either one of those plants would be ideal. I think the Flat Rock one even more so would be ideal to put that Fusion and MKZ into. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see it going.
And where do you put the new Lincoln that they're talking about? Maybe that goes to Hermosillo.
Which new Lincoln?
the big ultra luxury car, the rear-wheel drive luxury car they keep talking about.
Yeah, well, I think that's a ways away.
Yeah, I think that's a ways down the road, too.
Clearly, that's going to be off the Mustang platform.
Oh, the future Mustang platform, yeah. So.
It's fun playing the musical chairs of where all this kind of stuff could go. Let's take another break right now, and then let's come back and do rapid fire.
Okay.
I haven't looked to see if any questions are in. If not, this is going to be an early night. But, Ben, let's thank our friends at Hyundai.
Hyundai is known for the great value that it offers, but let's not forget about the technology. The Hyundai Sonata is the first vehicle in its segment with standard integrated Bluetooth hands-free phone. It's the first vehicle in its segment with factory-installed HD radio technology with multicasting. And it's the first vehicle in its segment with XM Nav traffic and XM data services. That, plus NHTSA's 5-star overall crash test rating and the IIHS top safety pick, explain why the Sonata is selling so well. And you can check it all out at HyundaiSonata.com.
Okay, Ben, it's time for rapid fire. Let's bring it up. Okay, it's time for rapid fire. And we got all kinds of questions coming in here. Okay, Al, and I hope, Al, I'm going to butcher your name, but it looks like J-Jack, something like that. Almost as easy to say as Cessny. So he asks, what do you think about OnStar's reversal on keeping cars in their monitoring system after customers have canceled their subscription? Why do you think OnStar wanted to keep the channel open for their past customers?
It was going to be a revenue stream. I think they thought they could create a revenue stream.
They could sell the information, and they did the smart thing. They
pulled it back.
They reversed the decision.
Well, after
right
you hit
away.
The headlines, and you had Charles Schumer, Senator of New York, saying, hey, boys, you better revisit this thing.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing that I pointed out on Autoline Daily. I know for a fact OnStar and Homeland Security have a very quiet but close relationship. And I know for a fact when Hurricane Katrina hit, Homeland Security ran right to OnStar and said, we want to monitor where people are going, fleeing, so that we can be set up to help accommodate as best possible or even mitigate traffic problems. And OnStar said, but we're not on every car. And they said, it doesn't matter. Your sample size is good enough to give us a statistically significant way of being able to monitor it. I wonder if Homeland Security said, OnStar, why don't you keep monitoring this stuff? That's my theory.
I think that still poses a risk. I mean, privacy is still a big sensitive issue in our society, and I think GM's lawyers would have had an issue with that because as the backlash showed, I mean, this is not something you really want to
do. Yeah, and that's why I'm saying, why would you keep on monitoring them knowing that this could be a big issue? Well, if the government's saying, would you please do this for national security issues, then you do it. That's why I'm saying.
But now you can go to Facebook and figure out where people are going.
Isn't that the truth? Okay, Prehistoric says, why would anybody buy Spiker?
Good question, no answer. Let's go on to the next one.
Jeff W. says, any thoughts about the announcement that Lincoln is doing away with its current face? I say thank God because personally I hate it.
I wouldn't worry too much about whatever you think Lincoln is or you're familiar with what Lincoln is. It all changes when the MKZ comes.
When the MKZ. Now you're going to see the new
MKS in L.A.
Don't judge it on that.
Yeah.
Because that is just sort of a warm over. Mine VW says, saw a Veloster on the road yesterday. Looked sharp.
I think it's a very sharp-looking car.
What's even sharper is the SEMA Veloster that Hyundai sent out today, which looks just awesome.
It's one of the few, it's one of the really distinctive cars on the road right now, I think.
And a three-door.
And a three-door.
Two on one side, one on the other. We're not talking about a two-door hatchback.
As long as we don't have to listen to John Krafcik talk about it at an auto show again, I'm happy. It's a cool car.
Jeff W. says, can you explain how the Ford Explorer was named North American Truck of the Year over the Dodge Durango? In just about every comparison test I have read, the Dodge Durango is rated better than the Explorer. I would agree. And I'm on the North American Truck of the Year jury.
I'm not a juror.
I love the Durango. I think it's awesome.
I don't know. I think
they're both awesome for different reasons.
For different reasons.
I'm not a juror either, so.
I think Ford might have done a better job with the Texas Truck Rodeo, and I think that might have helped.
They're different vehicles, and one thing I will say, Ford's got that EcoBoost. They're going to put the 2-liter in there.
That comes for 2012, right, the EcoBoost?
It does. And, so Ford is way ahead of Chrysler or Dodge in that regard, and that's going to really—
Overall fleet efficiency, Ford is really—
They got their act together,
Yeah. Thanks
to Mr. Cusack.
Yes.
And they're still pushing. I mean, they're still,
They're
going to go marching forward.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben, we got some calls coming in. Let's bring one of them in.
Good morning, men. Good evening. This is Youngblood in Cleveland, Ohio, calling.
All right.
I'd just like to make this comment to Mr. Peter DiLorenzo. Hey, your Super Juke from Nissan might be a reality. I don't know if you caught Autoblog, but they're taking the Juke and putting the GTR twin turbo 3.8 engine in it. Ooh-wee, giddy up.
Oh, yeah, that'll be cool.
Later. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, young bud.
GTR engine in a Juke?
Woo.
I don't even, that's awesome. Maybe too awesome.
It might be a concept car. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, Autoblog did have that.
I'll believe it when I see it, but it's a nice thought.
Maybe for SEMA.
So you do the GTR for SEMA. You get everybody, lathering all over it, and then you bring out, a sport version that isn't the GTR.
Well, what they need is you can't get the 6-speed manual with all-wheel drive. What they need is to do that, and if they're going to do that, it also needs more power. So maybe they're just telegraphing what they're going to do.
WRX?
But it won't be the GTR engine. It'll be another.
No, it won't be the GTR.
Baja Busta wants to know, will there be an avalanche with the replacement of the GMT 900?
I doubt it.
Didn't sell that well, did it?
No.
Well, there's your answer. Bob McElroy, or McElroy, because there's no relation here and everybody calls me McElroy, he says, would you expect better fuel mileage out of the Verano when compared to the Cruze? The Buick Verano, of course, is built off the Cruze.
No, I think it'll be a little bit heavier. I think it's got a little bit more equipment on it. I think it'll maybe not much. I mean, the difference isn't going to be much.
Yeah, a mile per gallon.
But it's going to be a little bit heavier car. It's going to have more sound deadening in it, more luxurious seats.
RTK42C says, do you have information about the upcoming Cadillac ATS? particularly about its rumored weight problem.
You know, I've seen it, and it looks good, but as far as a weight problem, I don't know about that.
I think every car has a weight problem.
Well, every GM car has a weight problem.
Right, and I think they're trying to fix that.
I know they've been working on it for years. I don't get it. I really don't get it. And it's not a material substitution thing.
They also used to have a ride height problem. Remember, GM cars always had about this much between the top of the tire and the... They sort of figured that out.
Right. But. Okay, George from Brooklyn wants to know, which will come first, VW becoming world sales leader or the Mets winning the World Series?
I go with the Mets.
Well, you know, anytime you put out a goal that says we're going to become number one in the world, you stuck your neck out. I mean, you're asking for it. And what the Volkswagen people will say is, oh, no, we never said that.
Oh, yes, they did.
Oh, yes, they did. That's right.
Repeatedly.
Several times.
At the highest levels of the company.
Right. Let's see. Jay Cujo wants to know, with the next generation pickup trucks, is there still a market for the Avalanche? Oh, we already had an Avalanche one. Sorry, Jay Cujo. Jim Campbell says when he was watching the 24 Hours of Le Mans Corvette racing, he noticed that they're not promoting E85 like they did in the past. Did they drop it?
No, they're still running it. By the way, they'll be running at Road Atlanta Saturday for Petit Le Mans. Mm-hmm. It's too bad it's not going to be live.
And don't some series run on pure ethanol now?
Well, IndyCar.
Indy does. IndyCar,
but they have been for a long time.
Right. So, yeah, maybe they're just not getting the advertising sponsorship to put on the Corvettes, but I think that they still are running E85.
Yeah, they are.
Hey, we got another phone call. Ben, let's bring it in.
Hey, John, Dan from Durham here. I just called to ask... Mr. DiLorenzo, what he thought of the new kabang, and whether they're actually going to end up calling it the Kamal or not. I'm getting really tired of the sickly sounding kabang name. I mean, it sounds like a 5-year-old named it. It's a great looking machine. I just think it's awesome. I still say I'd like to see a Hemi in it. Thanks a lot. Bye bye.
Well, you know...
Explain what the vehicle is if nobody's heard about it.
Yeah, it's the Maserati version of the Cherokee/Durango from Chrysler. I mean, conceivably, it will be the biggest selling Maserati in history, you know, basically. Because right now, you know, people aren't exactly clamoring to go buy a Maserati. I mean, they're very limited. Now, if they have this luxury SUV, you know, Sergio's trying to take a page out of the Cayenne book.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, Land Rover.
But I have a feeling it's going to be very expensive. If you want to know what the hit SUV this year is going to be, crossovers, the Range Rover Evoque.
The Evoque. Yeah.
Looks sensational on the road.
Yeah, you said, I haven't seen it on the road. I've only seen it at auto shows, like we talked about before. It looks like a concept car.
Yeah.
Sort of like the Velociraptor.
Yeah. Unsprung says, has California thought about the loss of gas tax money with EVs?
No.
I mean, you have a particular strain of politicians in Northern California who are so removed from reality, they think we'll all end up driving flatulence-powered, you know, smiley cars with no repercussions to the economy or anything else. No, they haven't thought about it. They don't have a clue.
No, I don't think that's an issue for them.
No. They just want to make laws.
Yeah, well, when they see the revenue drop, well, of course, my prediction is they're not going to see much of a revenue drop because I just don't believe electric cars are going to sell very well. Not this decade.
Well, you know, you're already seeing some revenue drop just from the increasing fuel economy. So, I mean, even in states like Michigan and Ohio, so... It does have an impact, and the impact adds up over time.
Sure it does. It makes it harder and harder to justify buying an electric. Mm-hmm. So,
and it also makes the roads a lot worse, but that's a whole other issue.
Yeah. John says, for the Volt, or for any electric for that matter, why isn't the alternator generator put on the drive shafts to the wheels to make up for some of the power used? If I'm understanding this right, it sounds like he's saying regenerative braking, you know?
I think this goes back to the theological question of whether the Volt is a hybrid or electric vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they didn't want to do it because it would have been described as a hybrid rather than as an electric vehicle.
Oh, I see what he's getting at. Yeah, okay, so it's not regen. Well, yeah, there is a way on the Volt where under certain circumstances you do have the engine coupling to the drive wheels.
To the drive wheels. And this was the big argument.
Yeah,
that was a big controversy. They made the car more efficient, and people were screaming at them for having made it more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We got one more phone call here, Ben. Let's bring that one in.
Yeah, John, Rick from San Diego. Hey, on the Fusion. I think that thing's going to sell very well, like Peter was saying. And forgetting that it sells very well in Mexico and Latin America, too. So they're going to need all the production they can get from Mexico and the U.S. And I agree with you, the Flat Rock plant makes a lot of sense. And it'd be great if they could make it in 3 plants. I think the sales would be very good, like Peter was saying. I think if it looks anything like the show car in Frankfurt, it's going to be a Grand Slam home run. And I think the fact that they were making the current car in Mexico has cost them a lot of sales over the time with all the Buy American and the bailouts and all that. Thanks.
Well, that Evo show car was very interesting because it was 2 cars in one. From the A-pillar forward, it's very more than a little reminiscent of the upcoming Fusion. And from the middle of the roof back, from a 3/4 rear, it looked like another car.
Looks like a Mustang.
Yes, a futuristic Mustang. So, you know, that Ford's taking their efficiency to a new level. But, right. I don't think people are prepared for the Fusion in that segment. I know the competitors aren't.
Well, you know, I think Hyundai is. They got there first with the new look, with the Sonata. And I think that's what gave everyone all the ammunition they needed after they saw the sales take off to say, okay, no more bland cars.
The designers came forward, and JMA's obviously.
Well, I think people are going to be pretty stunned at how dramatic the Fusion is.
And I agree with you. I mean, the Fusion's selling very well right now, as Rick mentions. It even sells reasonably well in Latin America. But, you know, I was in Brazil 2 years ago. They're $40,000 for Fusions in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that's got to do with import duties and the like. Even coming from Mexico, you know, they're getting flat.
Hey, how about the announcement? I know this is a totally different topic. That Cuba is allowing, for the first time, you can buy new cars.
So does that mean all those old cars in
for
Cuba?
The first time, the law has been changed, so now Cubans can buy import cars.
Well, it's not going to change much of anything because, with the exception of some sports figures and some musicians.
Well, because nobody's got money.
No one's got any money.
But,
right.
But it will slowly change. I'd ship some 500s down there.
Well, they could, except we still have the embargo. Maybe you have to ship something else.
You can ship from Canada.
Yeah, but they're made from Mexico.
That's right.
They can go straight to. I would think they could go straight.
But
Cuba.
You know, I thought that was cool.
Well, I was in Cuba.
I know you were.
And there was a Fiat dealership there.
Oh, there you go. Send a note to Fiat and Sergio tonight.
Right. And this is, but it was all like Eastern European made Fiats that were in the show.
Fiats from Poland. And,
yeah, right.
Yeah.
But, you know, eventually this will be a sea change down there.
Oh, it will be.
Yeah.
You know, look, someday the communist system's going to collapse there, and Cuba's going to revert back to its historic place, which is the richest of the Caribbean nations, which it had been since Columbus landed there. And it'll go back to that. They're a very, you know, entrepreneurial people if Castro hasn't stamped that out of them.
Yeah, but just the fact that, yeah, not everyone, majority of people can't afford a new car, but just the fact that they see new cars, that'll change everything. I mean, it's...
So what happens to all those Edsels down there?
Well, I'm sure they'll still be there for a long time, but you'll slowly but surely see new contemporary automobiles there, will be a shock.
What would be a Cuban Edsel worth on the collector's market?
Well, John knows about this more than I do, but they've been so, without access to parts, they've been so, rigged up with...
cannibalized.
Yeah, so it's not like, stumbling upon an Edsel that hasn't been driven in a barn in Pennsylvania.
No, but there are some rare cars there, and Bill Warner, our friend who runs the Amelia Island Concours, I know has, and others, mm-hmm. have been kicking around Cuba looking for some extremely rare cars.
Oh.
Porsches, for example, a couple of others, some Mercedes-Benzes and the like that...
From the 50s?
Right, that... are even in a shattered shell form
are still
worth a lot of money just because they're so rare. Whereas an Edsel that's just totally rusted out probably ain't going to be worth all that much.
Right.
But nonetheless, when I was there, you were not allowed to take any of the old cars off the island. Uh-huh. And
you can imagine
that changes.
You imagine the visual impact of, let's say, the new Volkswagen Up down there.
No, I'm thinking a ZL1 Camaro.
Well, yeah.
But if you want to stop the island in its
new. Well, yeah, that sort of stuff, too. Yeah, Ferraris and stuff. But I'm thinking of, if I were Volkswagen right now, I know that thing is, that law has been changed. I'd want the new people's car to be the Up.
That's a great idea, Peter. Right. That's a fantastic idea.
So,
the people's car in Cuba.
Dr. Piak, if you're listening, fire up the engines. call a midnight meeting.
The 500, I think that's not a bad idea, though.
Well, it'll be those kinds of cars. Yeah. And, they can't come from the U.S. No, they'll come from Mexico.
Yeah. Absolutely right.
Or Canada.
Or any other country in the world, because guess who only honors the U.S. embargo?
The U.S.
The U.S., right. And Israel and the Marshall Islands. Full stop. No other country in the world honors the embargo. And that's why I say lift the stupid thing, because the Cuban people have been told for 50 years, the only reason you're poor is because of those dirty Americans that have got this embargo going. And I'm going, wait a minute. Why don't you buy everything from China like we do? So get rid of the embargo, and that's when the people there will realize it's the system they've got that's holding them back, not the stupid embargo.
And the system's already kind of crumbling anyway, so I think they're starting to... Yeah, they can own... You can buy property in Cuba now, and you can own a small business there. So, the system is already, like you're saying, is already coming apart, so...
Yeah. Well, hey, guys, it's the top of the hour. We ought to wrap this up here. But Joe Sesney, thanks so much for coming in and sharing all your thoughts, especially on the UAW negotiations. That was good.
My pleasure.
Peter, as always.
Yeah, Jen, the last AAH in this facility.
In this facility. We should let everybody know we're going to be off next week. I got to be out of town, and besides, we're still putting the new studio together, but... Then we'll do another show in our new digs, and that'll be awesome.
Yeah, it will be awesome. Now, the new digs, we have the wherewithal to have a car.
And we can bring cars in the studio. Yes, we can.
Yeah, so we can sit around and talk about a particular car.
Thanks, Peter.
Don't be looking for it anytime soon.
But there you go.
Theoretically, God, I can't even say it, but maybe someday down the road. You'll see a car in the studio.
Yeah.
Not anytime soon. Thanks, Chip, for pointing that out.
You're welcome.
And don't forget, you can always get all of Peter's stuff to read online at twitter.com/autoextremist or autoextremist.com. You can follow our stuff, too, at twitter.com/autoline or friend us at facebook.com/autolinedetroit.
Yeah, we're on Auto Extremists is on Facebook. Also,
Joe, how about your stuff?
You can find it on www.theoaklandpress.com. We also have the Oakland Press Facebook page, and I do use Twitter most days, and I also have a blog on the Oakland Press website.
Cool. Well, thanks, folks, for having tuned in tonight. Our last night in Livonia, And we'll be joining you in 2 weeks again.
Visit our website, OuterLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Outerline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Outerline Detroit. That's all there and much more at OuterLineDetroit.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Hyundai. Experience the 2011 Hyundai Sonata today at HyundaiSonata.com.